This is the Top Training Podcast. We want to welcome everyone, and we told you this last week, or the last episode, which was episode 18, that we were going to have a special guest, and we are so excited. We have Sarah Schillinglaw in the building.
Hi. I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing good. Doing good. Been excited talking about this podcast. And then even today we were like, wait, it's podcast day. We got to do the podcast with Sarah.
Yeah. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. Well, good to have you. Just for the people listening to the podcast, can you give us a little origin story about yourself? You don't have to go way back to when I was 2 years old, but just kind of let them know what you do and how long you've been dancing.
So I was a studio kid mainly, started really young at four, mainly just grew up in that world. But my parents in high school did make me try out for the high school dance team because they thought it would be good for me to get involved in my high school, and ended up liking it. It wasn't a really big challenge for me, but it kind of opened me up to the dance team world, which I liked the idea of, especially at the collegiate level. So it was a great introduction into that and kind of helped me get prepared for that next level because I knew I wanted to go to college and I wanted to still dance. So it just made it a little bit easier to transition into that dance team world, which I went to the University of Tennessee, Knoxville, and was on their dance team for all 4 years. And also when I got out of high school, I started teaching dance with a company, UDA, Universal Dance Association, which is pretty much all in the dance team world as well. So I taught summer camps to middle and high schoolers, did that throughout college. I did a variety of competitions, whether it was helping or judging, whatever kind of role they put me in, I was happy to jump in. And then after college, I went into, I guess, the real world life and got a job outside of the dance world, but never could really give up dance. So I always taught dance, participated in private lessons, all that kind of stuff, worked with dance teams outside of my regular job. And that's still the case. So I still have my regular job and then still teach private lessons, help out with teams and different just dance activities when I've got time.
Y'all, Sarah's the bomb. She's super busy. So if you ever get a chance, schedule any time to talk with her, meet with her, yourself, or have any of your students work with her. She does not disappoint.
It's the real deal. But for real though. Now see, I said I wasn't gonna do this, but I had just hearing you just talk, it just immediately made me go back to the fact. Now y'all, for everyone listening to this podcast, not only is Sarah our first guest, but even just hearing everything that you've done, that you are continuing to do, I have to say that I'm having like a little emotional proud moment. Because we also had the privilege of teaching you I think, wasn't Sarah in the group, our first hip hop class where you had me coming? Yes,
I was in the back corner because technically I should not have been in that class because it was an age up. But Jenny let me and Kiri, of course, take. So we had to be partners because we weren't really supposed to be in the class. But we got to take your very first trial class.
Yes, and I have to say, I mean, just you from day one, I was like, oh. Now, this girl right here, especially when y'all had the Kangos on with the jeans.
Yes, one of my favorites. No worries. I still have the costume. The shoes are actually in my closet.
She's also a fabulous example of a student. So parents, if you ever get the chance.
And working with our daughter now in private lessons, which she loves, by the way.
Good.
Sarah said I was getting better.
Yeah, so. We know all you can do. That doesn't always mean that students do off the bat.
True.
That's because she's tough and she's the real deal and all good things. So our daughters and students Love her. Okay, question real for our
listeners.
I had asked you this a couple months ago. The main difference, because I don't know, we're dance studio people, and you've been on all aspects of it, but really the differences in programs I don't really know. You tell us when through high school, you know, dance studio, high school dance team, school dance team studios that are private. I know there's lots of different options, and you know, I don't know what your suggestions are for anybody thinking about
what do they need to do? Yeah,
well, yeah.
They need to take
level.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah, so I almost see it in three different dance worlds. So we have the dance studio world that I think most of us are really familiar with. You're going to have ballet, tap, jazz, point, lyrical, modern, tumbling, all the normal stuff. And when you go to competitions, you can do solos, duets, you can do 100 group dances. So that's a world that most of us are pretty familiar in. Yep. I would say on the other spectrum of dance is dance team. And so with dance team in the middle and high school age group, think of it almost like a baseball team. You have to go to that school to even be able to try out.
Right.
So
right.
I can't choose what team I'm a part of. I'm just a part of my school's team. Yeah. So if you have a good team or a good school with a team program, it's definitely worth getting involved in, because you're going to start learning kind of different requirements that are in the dance team world that may not exist in the dance studio world, such as pom. Pom is a style of dance that you don't really ever see at studios or at studio competitions, but that's a big aspect of dance team, because part of being a dance team is being a part of the school. And so being involved at various activities to show support to other teams, so show school spirit, that's where you're going to see more of the pom and what we call game day activities.
Right.
So it's a great introduction into that. Now, before you get to the college world, there's also what we call the all-star world. And that's where I kind of see it as a hybrid between dance studio and dance team. And so it's almost like a dance team with some drippings and special sauce from the dance studio as well. So you're going to get different styles than dance team, but not all the styles that you're going to get at dance studio. So for example, at all-star studios, you're not going to see tap. You may not see point, or if you do, it's just kind of hit or miss for whatever studio you're at or all-star program you're at. So you can think of all-star as like a hybrid of the two.
And it could also potentially maybe be a route for maybe dancers that for whatever reason aren't a part of a school with a dance team.
Exactly. So it can be kind of a supplement for that. And then I've also seen it, there are some areas where their studios may not be very competitive, but their dance teams are competitive. So it may almost be a supplement for the studio, depending on the area that you're in. Perfect. But I would say more than likely you're at a strong studio and you need a little introduction to a dance team. But if your school doesn't have one, then the all-star world is a great way to get that exposure. And then unlike the dance team world with all-stars, it's like a studio in that I can pick and choose whichever location I want to go to, as long as you're willing to drive or fly or go to that location.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's just
well, that kind of helps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Into, because that gives some information as to kind of how to prepare.
Yes.
Pre-college tryouts. Aside from that, are there any other extras outside of your dance studio, your dance team? I'm kind of primarily talking, about tricks and tumbling. Mm-hmm. Mentioned pom, and not sure a whole lot of places where you could go to get some extra classes like that. But really, tricks and tumbling, I don't know how that works into collegiate dance.
Yeah, so I would definitely make sure any student who's considering a dance team path in college is really comfortable with their skills. If you start looking at different colleges, most of them online are going to have a set list of skill expectations. And just a heads up, that is usually the bare minimum. So they may say, you know, a quad and an advanced turn section. I always recommend look up that school, whether it's at their nationals competition, which it would typically be at UDA, NDA, or DTU, and look at their videos and see what type of skills they're really doing versus what they're just saying they're expecting. Because those expectations, like I said, are the very bare minimum. You can also look up the schools on their Instagram. Every college school has an Instagram page now, so you can see not only their dances, but they post tons of just little clips of skills and tricks and also combos that they're working on throughout the year. So you can get a good idea of their style, because that's another thing. In the studio, you get exposure to a lot of different styles, whereas in the dance team world, you're only going to compete one jazz slash lyrical type routine. Yeah. So you want to find a team that's a good fit for you or a style that you may like. So when you're looking at style, definitely look at the different teams' performances to see which one kind of matches what you like. And when it comes to skills, definitely look online to see what the expectations are. For any top performing team, I would say a bare minimum for pirouettes is quad, and that's a bare minimum.
Right.
Also, not just getting around four times, but getting around correctly.
Right.
And you also have to be very coachable, because in the dance team world, everyone wants to look exactly the same. So if you hold your fingers slightly differently because that's how you've been trained, your coach is going to expect you to be able to make adjustments down to like the pinky finger and how it's slightly tilted right or left, because it gets very, very detailed. But jumps, you know, kind of just come and go, whatever the trends are. You know, there's a lot of floor work that's very trendy right now. So I just say, when it comes to the skills, you want to be at the absolute top level, be watching videos online, be watching the teams that you're interested in. And I always tell kids, look at every single skill that a team member is doing, even if it's just an individual skill, and try to get that, because that's going to be the bare minimum expectation for the next year, because every team wants to get better and better each year.
Now, I heard you say jazz, you said lyrical on there. Are those the main styles, the jazz, lyrical, hip hop? And then I heard you mention palm as well.
Yes. So I will say it slightly depends on what competition route your team is going, because UDA and NDA will have slightly different categories. But typically what you'll see is a palm category. You'll see a hip hop category, a dance category, which that's usually jazz or lyrical. Some people, there's in another kind of arena, NDA, they have a team routine. But most all places are now also incorporating a game day routine. And that's going back to kind of the roots of being a school team. So it's almost like a sideline routine, but it's a combination of what you would do on the sideline. So it'd be some palm routines, like a shortened abbreviation of that. It would be a chant that you would do in front of the crowd, as well as like a little sideline jazz or hip hop type routine. Right. Not one that has a lot of high skill level, but more of like an entertainment value. And so it's all combined into one routine. So dance, jazz, which is really jazz or lyrical, palm, hip hop, and game day are the main categories that you'll see.
I want to talk about hip hop for just a second. Just going back and thinking while you were talking, I've never been familiar with any of the dance team categories at all, like before. So I just started off as a street dancer, battled, freestyle, stuff like that, then became a teacher, started teaching the techniques. But then I noticed that when I would watch the dance teams and I would see the trick section, I was like, oh, these are all of the tricks that I learned. Like, I used to be in a group where it was divided. You were either a B-boy, a B-girl, or you were a popper, glider, or a waver when it comes to pop. And I noticed each, like, I can look at the tricks and tell you what it is. I'm like, that's a head spring. That's a freeze. That's
freeze.
That's a windmill. That's a flare.
Yeah.
So I just started. I was like, you know what? I know that we're preparing for a dance competition. That's not, you know, like dance team. It's like, you know, we're competing at Next Star and Showstopper, stuff like that. But thinking about the students, I've always been like, well, you know what? We're going to start learning these tricks now, because I think it would be beneficial to the students if they ever decided to go into that. So would you say, like, to some of the teachers, what importance would you put on, you know, because like I said, we used them, but we didn't need them in the dance studio competition world.
Right.
And I had a lot of students come back like, I'm so glad we worked on my kip up or my kip up into the plank, because when I went to college trying out for the dance team, it helped me out. Like, what would you say to
I'm going to answer that along with, I know Jenny had asked a question about tumbling. So I will say in the dance team world, they are very proactive from a safety measure. So if you go back 10 years or even further, you were not allowed to do any tumbling. You could have had an entire team that tumbled on the sideline and at the school events, but they would not allow you to tumble at any of the competitions.
Yeah.
Now that has progressed. And so as they start opening up the rules to allow tumbling, hip hop tricks, all that kind of stuff, everyone is jumping on it because it shows the next level of difficulty. So absolutely, if you are going to a collegiate dance team, you want to start preparing, even from a hip hop trick perspective, those kind of basics, the ones that you were mentioning, but then also being creative, because it's always about, in the dance team world, who's going to come back the next year with the newest and greatest trick. And it may not be anything official, but they've created to make look cool from a visual aspect. So you've got to have a lot of strength. And that's where the tumbling does come in. There are still quite a few limitations with tumbling, but if you have the strength and the skill set to tumble, a lot of times you can work that into some of the skills that may come out of a hip hop trick, or may even be potentially added into like a palm or a jazz type trick. But again, it just kind of depends on what the competition will allow. That's usually the biggest restriction.
Yeah. So good. So good.
Hey, I'm going to come in real quick for any dance teachers or dance studio owner listeners. Listen to this stuff and educate yourself a little bit on this. And even if you don't want to, please like help direct your students in the directions, you know, that they want to go, especially if it's something, you know, like a positive as a dance team, just because it may not be what you do or what you offer, or even you don't understand it, or, you know, don't know anything about it. Please be receptive enough and be a good listener, you know, as a teacher, and be able to direct your students in the right place, because they're listening and it's important.
Yep. It's true.
All right. I got a question.
Yeah.
For incoming, I have down here kind of incoming freshmen.
Freshmen.
What, not necessarily, you know, what they, you know, need to do. We've kind of, you know, covered a lot of that. But what is, what does a first year look like? And this is kind of, you know, probably more of a parent's concern, is juggling school. As a freshman in college with a dance team, you know, if they happen to make the tryouts.
Yeah. Do you want me to speak on making the team first, or just once they're on the team?
Let's go.
Let's go a little bit further back. Okay. So
what I three part is one, just kind of the tryout team. And a, you know, kind of a quick glimpse of what that looks like.
Yeah. So right now there's different avenues that the teams are going to get their people on the team. Some are doing the traditional tryout, which is they set a date, you show up, you do what they ask, and you make it or you don't. Now, a lot of teams have moved to the recruitment style, which means you have to submit potentially now. If I'm a senior in high school, I'm submitting kind of an application to then also include a video of my dance skills that will then be evaluated by the school. So then you'll find out if you make it to the next cut. What the next cut looks like really varies on the school. Sometimes it's, all right, in person, you're going to come in and show us XYZ, whereas others, it's just like, okay, you have now made it to the tryout portion. So it really just depends. So definitely follow your schools or look at the different schools to see what you need to do, because some people may not realize if I'm a senior now, you may need to do something by the end of August or by the end of September just to even be considered for the school. But one thing I definitely want to point out at any age for your studio owners and for your parents, if you think there is a possibility that you have a student who's interested in dancing in college, start getting them to dance team clinics. Because the more they can see you, the more they're going to not necessarily be invested, but have you on their radar.
Sure.
You don't want to be that person who just shows up in their video applications, because then they're thinking, this person's just throwing me in,
right,
or throwing us in because they're wanting to see if they can make it. They don't really want to be on our team. So again, if you think they're interested, start sending them to dance team clinics. And those are clinics that the teams themselves actually hold. So for example, like if you live in Tennessee, I'm going to look up some of the major schools like Memphis, MTSU, UT Knoxville, ETSU, and try to make it to those different clinics to see what I can learn for them. See if that's the style I'm interested in, as well as just get myself in front of the coaches and other dancers. So then we start to build that relationship. Even if you don't go that route, you are putting yourself ahead, because if you are waiting until your senior year at this point, it is almost too late in the game. And I hate to say that, but it is pretty much the truth now. So you got to start early these days. I'm not saying it's impossible, but you're not doing yourself any services by waiting until the last minute. So that's one of the things that I'm trying to let studio kids and parents and studio owners know. You actually need to be starting a lot sooner than what you think. It used to be where you could just try out right before you graduated from high school and you're good to go. But this takes a lot of planning now. They even have dance team combines at various places where a bunch of the schools will show up at this event, and they all will have eyes on you learning combos and doing skills and all that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of resources out there. It's just kind of all over the place. So if you guys have any people who are struggling to know where to go, feel free to have them reach out to me. I'm happy to point people in different directions.
Y'all, this is so valuable. Wow. Don't be sleeping.
I was just going to say, I don't have any sound effects, but if I had an air horn, I'd go,
Yes. No, I have middle school students who I am saying absolutely no pressure, because you don't want to put too much pressure on these little ones, but just ask them, see what types of styles they're interested in. As parents, as studio owners, you're going to know the kids and just be thinking, if that's a route they may like, let's just have them try a clinic, see if it's something they like. Because even the schools will do junior clinics, and those are not really competitive at all, but it's great for the kid to get to the campus, see what being at school is like, because then that does lead into your next question, Jenny. What is it like when you're on campus, actually a freshman at the school? Well, you definitely want to visit the campus prior to ever like trying out to the team for the team, just to make sure it is a school that you actually want. Because the big thing that you're going to hear from every college coach is you are a student athlete. The first word being a student. So you are expected to go to class, you know, maintain certain grade point average. And with that, you will also be an athlete, which is being a part of the dance team. But when you're thinking about expectations, I like to think of it as like a part-time job that sometimes almost becomes a full-time job during certain times of the years. You are going to have, depending on the school and if it falls under the athletic department or not, you are going to have practices just for game day events, which will also prepare you for various engagements on campus and off campus, such as like the freshman orientation. You're going to be participating in that as a dance team member. You're going to go to pep rallies off campus leading up to football games. you're going to have then also practices for you to actually keep growing as a dancer. So whether it's skills, whether it's movement, whether it's a choreography, because you'll have choreographers coming in to set your nationals pieces. You're balancing all of that throughout the year, as well as potentially dancing at various games that the school offers. So some schools you'll just dance at football games, some you'll just dance at basketball, sometimes you'll do almost all of them. So that's another thing that you may want to evaluate as a parent or as a dance studio owner, if you're helping a student, how much commitment they can offer outside of school. So if you have a student who really struggles with school, they may want to be a part of a team that doesn't have as many requirements. If they have a kid who excels at school and can do any and everything else to pack the schedule, then you may be looking at some of those more higher level schools as well, because they're going to have a lot more expectations. But when it comes around to nationals time, just a heads up, normally all the kids at December, you know, they finish their finals, go home and enjoy a nice winter break. Dance team students do not enjoy a long winter break. You are usually on campus for a couple weeks in a row, practicing all day, every day, with a couple games, like basketball games, mixed in there. So my Christmas vacations were typically very short, a couple days, just right around Christmas. And then we're right back in it, because nationals is typically right towards the beginning of January if you're competing at UDA. Some of the others are a little bit later. So if you're dancing at a school that goes to NBA or DTU, you may have a longer Christmas break, but you may not have a spring break. So just kind of depends on where you're competing. But at some points it does pretty much turn into a full-time job. But outside of that, it's usually a part-time job along with your schooling.
Okay, I've got this question for, and this is for students only. And I know there's, you know, there's a million things, but if there's one thing,
One out of the million.
What is something, I mean, or what is the one thing that you would suggest for an answer, you know, high school, middle school, high school, that they could do? What would be the best thing that they could do on their own for team training? You know, for us with like dance training, you know, I would say, you know, for dance studio or competition or convention, it would just be, you know,
stretch.
in our training program, but I didn't know if there was anything specific that, whether it's, you know, a certain diet or cardio for us is, you know, pretty important. But I didn't know if you had maybe not one, but a couple things that dancers should take, you know, full responsibility for. Outside of their external training?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's always areas that people can be focusing on. I will say, if you're a more studio-based dancer, one of the hurdles that people have joining a dance team, if you haven't been on one before, is cleaning a routine, as well as making yourself look exactly like everyone else.
Yeah.
So if you don't have that experience, I would definitely challenge you to work on that. And some people would say, well, how do I do that if I don't have a team? That's where you really have to focus in on yourself. And what I typically challenge people to do is find a dance team and learn a section of their routine. Try to make yourself look exactly like them, and then either record yourself or have someone record you and look at side by sides. See how much you actually look exactly like them. And then also try to get another person's perspective, because you may see one thing and your dance teacher or dance studio owner may see another thing. And I would really highly encourage, if none of those people in your world have a dance team background, find someone who does, because they're going to look at it from an even more nitpicky mindset than probably anyone else. Because it gets very, very specific, as far as like your head is turned a little too far to the left and your chin is down just a little too much. And so you will want it to look exactly like the person next to you. So if you have that studio background, that would definitely be an area I would focus on.
And that is exactly the biggest challenge from all of my students that have gone on to pursue dance team or have actually worked with you.
Yes.
is that's been like, oh my goodness, is it that important?
Oh yes, yeah. The amount of time you will spend cleaning an eight section is, or an eight count is incredible. It's something where it takes a lot of focus. It takes a lot of, you know, just patience, because it may not even be an eight count where you're doing anything for the first four. So you're just having to sit there and wait, or stand there and wait. And that's where, again, as an individual dancer, if you have the opportunity to keep working on other things, be working on that in that time. But transitioning into the dance team world, that would definitely be a big focus. I know you also brought up cardio. I'm going to push that probably even more so, because yes, in the dance studio world, you may have a 6 minute piece, but how actively are you dancing that full 6 minutes? Probably not that much.
Right.
Dance team routines are 2 minutes, and it is hit the ground running, and it just accelerates the entire 2 minutes. So the stamina that's expected in those routines is at a whole nother level than what most people are familiar with in the studio world, especially when you then add in the adrenaline of competing at nationals, which you're talking about some people who have competed, you know, there are some dance people, are dance team girls who have competed at like the dance awards. They've been on dance shows on TV, and the intensity there is very different than on the nationals floor. The nationals floor is like nothing else. So you will lose your energy in about 30 seconds on the nationals floor. So your stamina has to be through the roof, which is a lot of cardio training. My dance students always joke, because I have a dance cardio class that I'll do, just because it's very specific for dancers, but it's kind of a great preparation from that aspect. But I mean, just any general cardio training where you're pushing yourself for a short amount of time and then trying to incorporate dance type movement into it. Because if you're just going to run or sprint for 2 minutes, that's one thing. But you have to remember, in those 2 minutes, we're up and down and left and right and all those other places. So you have to be running, but then incorporating all that other type of muscular involvement and different levels, that kind of stuff as well. So those would be my two big areas. But it also just depends on what your studio does and doesn't focus on. So if your studio is more movement based, I'm going to say you really need to work on your skills, because that's going to be a high expectation at dance team as well.
Right.
But across the board, stamina and just cleaning routines and cleaning yourself as a dancer is typically what you'll see going from studio to dance team.
So good. Look, listen, people, if you're listening to this now, make sure that you share this podcast. I didn't know. I thought it was going to be a regular podcast. I didn't know. Podcast gold. And I'm serious. Everything that we've been talking about, this is like big time information. And again, Sarah, I want to just say thank you so much for joining, sharing this. And real quick, I know we are against the clock, but I want to say this. Because I'm thinking about somebody like in our world that actually got a DM from a studio owner, good friends of ours, and her daughter actually got hired to be the dance team coach for her high school.
Oh yeah.
So I'm thinking of some things that maybe, you know, for somebody taking on that position, I want to dig into the captain aspect of it just a little bit, just to give people an idea of how you were able to go from, you know, being a dancer into being like the team captain. So one, I would say, is there any like memorable moment that you have? I'm sure you have a lot, but as a dancer and a captain when you were at UT that you can share with us?
Memorable, just in the sense of accomplishments, I would say winning my senior year at Nationals was a big deal.
Hey.
But as far as actually being a captain and recognizing what you needed to do, really it was just learning how to best communicate and understand people, even from a nonverbal perspective, because so much of what's said from to and from people is nonverbal. So being able to read people, being able to accommodate a lot of different personalities. And I don't mean accommodate as in you're going to make everyone happy, but how can you make everyone work while still being a dancer yourself was definitely one of those moments where it's like, okay, this is a change of pace from just being on the team versus leading the team. So it's a lot of relationship management. It's a lot of communication and just kind of finding your place in the team, because everyone's going to have a different leadership style. Yeah. But what we have to recognize is it's not always about the leader. It's about the team that you're leading and what they need. So how can you accommodate your leadership or your coaching style, depending at what level you're at, to the team that you're working with or that you're a part of?
How did you balance that out, being like the captain and having your own personal dance goals? Like, what did you do personally to kind of balance the two?
Yeah, well, I was always one where you could find me in the dance studio pretty much anytime. So I was happy to go work on things individually. I, as a freshman, was practicing things in the dorm. So that was nothing new. You could find me in an extra studio when I was in high school and middle school too. So that was just kind of innately in me. Just wanting to constantly practice and be up on the newest dance trends and skills and that kind of stuff. Yeah. So taking that and allowing that to be my goal outside of the team was probably more of a shift and a focus. Whereas prior to being a leader, I could just focus more on myself.
Yeah.
Even in the team practices. So, that was what I tried to do, is just find that time to commit to myself outside of the team, as well as focusing on the team while I was there. But with that being said, as part of a leader, you do want to find other areas that people can grow in. So mm-hmm. you can still focus on yourself if you're able to pass over some of the leadership skills at various parts in the year. And one of the nice things about dance teams is there's typically more than one captain.
Yeah.
But I will say I was just kind of in an odd space because I was the only senior and the class below me had a lot of juniors. So it was just decided it would be easier just to have one captain. So you will have times where you can kind of pass the leadership baton to others and you can still then focus on yourself in class. But if you don't have that opportunity, you just have to recognize, just like a parent or a studio owner, like your schedule may change and you have to adapt to fit the needs of the team and then figure out your own individual growth areas outside of that.
So good.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we have lots of takeaways. We got some good nuggets.
Oh, I learned some things.
Good. The last thing I just like to tell people, if you're not in the dance team world, it is its own world in itself, just right. like the dance studio world is. So if you don't know someone in the dance team world and you're interested in the dance team world, you got to find someone. It's not easy just to break in at the college level without knowing anyone at the college or in the dance team world. And if you are that person, you're probably that top notch person where the coaches are already coming to you. So if that's not happening, then you need to insert yourself into that world by getting to know people. Like I said, I'm happy to be a resource. I don't necessarily know everyone everywhere, but we can try to find you someone in your area.
Starting with the basics of, is it a tryout or an audition? You might need to talk to somebody.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and I will say it's really overwhelming because some people are thinking, oh, you know, I just want to figure out my colleges and go from there. But I'm like, no. there's a lot more to it. And we probably need to start today.
Yeah. All right. Well, I tell you what, I'm sure, like I said, there's people that we talk to all the time. You are working with our daughter right now.
Yeah.
Technique and stuff like that. If there's people that want to reach out to you, what is the best way for them to get at you, your socials and all that good stuff? Share that with everybody so they can get in contact with you.
Yeah, honestly, I'm not a very social media active person, so maybe one day I will. That's not my jam, I guess. So yeah. Usually people will text or call, so I'll let them reach out to you first and you can vet them for me. I'm just kidding. Or just a general email as well. So I'm happy to share that with anyone who reaches out to you as well.
Yeah, definitely. You can hit us up on Top Dance Program on Instagram. And then when you listen to this podcast, you're like, you know what? I want to work with Sarah on some privates too. I have some students interested. Hit us up. We'll pass the information along. And Sarah, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. So, happy to help. Yeah, you guys did so much for me. So happy to help wherever I can.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
I truly accredit all of my successes to growing up in the dance world. Everything that has brought me success in the professional world came from what I learned in the dance world, whether it was at the studio or dance team level. Couldn't have done more for me for my life. So it's all been great.
Talk to them. Let them know. Talk to them.
You're welcome. Thank you, guys.
All right. Thank you guys for tuning in. Like, comment, share, subscribe. And that is the end of the podcast. And we are out.
Bye.